Men get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. It's August 1st. It's Monday. Thank you for joining us today. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And once again, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
A little rough start there for August 1st, but
Must be. It's not the heat, it's the humidity, Melody.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
It's something. Maybe it's both, but gold today. We had both gold and silver rise today. We have gold up 230 today in the aftermarket. 230 in the aftermarket at 1353.70. Silver's up 9 cents today at 20.48. Platinum was up 10 at 1162, and palladium was up 5 at $719. USDX today was trading stronger, 0.23 at 95.74. Crude oil broke 40, 39.99. I love it. 30, yeah, like that's a real trading number, 39.99. More like a couple of computer digit trades, you know. Oh, what should we post the crude oil at today, George? Well, how about $39.99? That would make it be down 1.61. That's what it was, 1.61 to the downside, $39.99. Paper markets today, the Dow was down 27 points at 18,404. The NASDAQ was up 22 points at 51.84. The S&P down 2 at 21.70. 10-year yield, up a little bit, 0.04. At 1.50, Euro 1.12, a little change in the European and Asian markets. So Not a lot of changes there. It was nice to see gold up a couple dollars. It had pressure on it all day long. And so we'll take it. It's a nice day for gold and silver. So I think we both saw the, I'm not sure I have it. No, go ahead, Al.
There's an article on Puerto Rico bondholders devastated, but see hope, U.S. plan. I just love it when people are hopeful about this, these bondholders. This is an interesting article because, to my mind, it illustrates a pattern that we're likely to see in this country also. I start out with a human interest story of Puerto Rican attorney Santiago Mari. He sighed as he punched numbers into his calculator and saw the result. The value of his retirement account has dropped 75% due to the collapse in Puerto Rican bonds that made up much of his personal portfolio. He's long abandoned plans for an early retirement, and he's far from alone. We have a whole lot of Puerto Ricans who've invested millions of dollars in bonds that they're unable to sell. While hedge funds hold much of Puerto Rico's troubled debt, individual investors own an estimated $15 billion in bonds, 22% of the island's overall, $68 billion in public debt. And what it reminds me of in part is I've been pushing a slogan, an axiom, what can't be paid won't be paid. I've been talking about it for at least 5 years. It seems so obvious, what can't be paid won't be paid. Well, yeah, of course. But when you look at the size, the dimension, the magnitude of a government's bonds, how many bonds have they issued? When you do a little fooling around with the bonds, you can come up with a probability of whether the government's ever going to be able to repay those bonds. Puerto Rico can't repay their bonds. And individual investors own an estimated $15 billion of those bonds. That means those individual investors are going to lose $15 billion. One man's debt is another man's asset. Right? The government's debt has been treated as assets by the individual investors. They have a piece of paper. The government promises to pay. They say, I have a piece of paper that collectively they have $15 billion in pieces of paper. But the government can't pay. They might pay a little of it before they're done, but they're not going to pay it. This is what I mean. If they can't pay, they won't pay. What's that mean? It means the people holding on to these pieces of paper as if they were assets are about to be defrauded. They're going to lose their assets because they trusted paper as a form of storing their wealth. It's happening in Puerto Rico. The other thing they said up here, I started, the value of his retirement account dropped 75% due to the collapse in Puerto Rican bonds. I've been telling people for at least 5 years that I anticipate, and I can't give you evidence to support it, I can't give you a chart, but I anticipate that 80 to 90% of the existing bonds and stocks, their value will fall by that much.
Yeah.
Now, is it true? Is it false? But here we see it's happening or something close to it. 75% so far in Puerto Rico, all right? At least for this guy who's invested in bonds. There's a lesson here, and everybody should pay attention to it and take a look and see what's happened in Puerto Rico, because you can bet that pretty much the same thing, the same pattern, the government is going to make promises. The government announced a moratorium on general obligation bonds. All right? It means, they're still good bonds. We're just not paying them. That's all. Bunk. The government's bankrupt.
Right, they already defaulted.
They've already defaulted. That's evidence of bankruptcy. They want to restructure, and their hope is that the United States is going to come in and regulate their financial affairs. Oh, won't that be a blessing, huh? They've done so well about regulating our own affairs. They're certainly competent to regulate the affairs of Puerto Rico.
But you know what? Puerto Rico, I was reading a little bit about Puerto Rico earlier today, and they were in agriculture. I mean, their country, they produced agriculture. And they brought then, over a series of years, they brought in manufacturing from the States. Mm-hmm. And everything was great. They eliminated the agriculture. They transferred it to factories. People had factory work. Then they increased taxes. And guess where all those factories went? Elsewhere.
Yeah.
They left. And left all these people because now they couldn't go back to their agriculture because all that farmland and everything was replaced by, you know, a lot of the factories and so forth. And I mean, and so it just goes to show how governments, not just ours, but all of them, many of them, all of them, how they destroy. And they really don't care because the elite, the multinational corporations, they come in there, they destroy land, they destroy countries, and they destroy people's lives because they really don't care about you. And if you think,
oh, it's not just they don't care about you, they may want you to die. I mean, if you destroy people's agriculture, for example, we really do need to buy food. And if you cut out enough American agriculture, Puerto Rican agriculture, Venezuelan agriculture,
it's all control.
People are going to die.
I mean, that's how they're going to do it. They're going to control the people through agriculture. But anyway, my point is they don't care about you. They don't care whether you live or die.
Well, I think they care if we die.
They don't care if you have a nice retirement. They don't care if your retirement funds go from, you know, if you lose 75%, and everyone who has any type of retirement account has bonds in them, probably 25% or more.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to take care. If you want to end up like this person in Puerto Rico where he lost 75% of his retirement, what's he going to do? It's probably cheap in Puerto Rico until inflation begins to take
Regardless, off. He's going to have to open a little fruit stand or something like that to make ends meet.
Well, he gets to go on government dole, and then they just eliminate
him. But the government's broke.
You're a useless eater.
The government is broke.
Eater.
They're not going to get anything out of the government, at least not for long, because the government itself is broke, and they have to cancel existing debt. They can't pay it. They have to cancel it, and the debt is being held by other people as assets. And when they cancel the debt, they necessarily wipe out the correlative assets.
And don't think it can't happen here in the States.
It's got to happen in the States.
Because it's going to happen.
Mathematically, there's no other alternative. They can't get around this. They can't pay the debt. What can't be paid won't be paid.
The only thing they're doing is delaying the moment in time.
They're delaying the moment in time, and they're also seeking to tell, to convince the people that the government is still in charge, that the government is still competent and capable, and we got this, we can handle this, this isn't too big for us to handle.
And
they're trying to maintain
the money,
illusion that control is there. I don't think it is.
As long as they can print the money to some degree.
Even then.
But it all comes tumbling down, because something comes along that they can print money as long as there's confidence.
Yeah, but there's the problem. How long is there going to be confidence?
Well,
Weimar Republic could print money.
So
the whole thing blew up in their face. Zimbabwe could print money. They wound up printing quadrillion-dollar bills.
Yep.
All right? So, but eventually, it doesn't matter. People finally, they figure out this hyperinflation is a fraud, and they will not, they withdraw their support. I mean, both of these instances, you get into hyperinflation, it lasts a couple of years, and people finally just say, that's it, I'm sick of it, I quit. They'll play along for a while, but you get 2 or 3 years of hyperinflation and everything blows up. The currency dies, the economy collapses, whatever remains of it.
What happens is they'll reintroduce a currency. Just that's what they did in the Weimar Republic. That's what they did in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe?
I get that, but my point is, it was the U.S. dollar, but they reintroduced a currency. They did it in the Weimar Republic, and they're going to do it here. But I believe what that currency is going to be is it will have to be backed by gold somehow, some way. And I don't think that book has been written yet.
Well, they're going to try to convince people that they can use special drawing rights out of the IMF, and that's good as gold. I don't think it's going to fly. I think the Federal Reserve and the federal government, they know, look, the public's not going to fall for this. I think if and when the dollar goes down, I don't think it can be replaced except by something that is at least partially backed by gold. And if it is, the price of gold has to go up dramatically. They're not going to back a new dollar. with gold that's priced at $1,300, $1,400 of the new dollar for an ounce of gold. That's not happening. They're going to 5,000, 10,000, some people think 50,000. Nobody knows. I don't know where it's going to go, but
it's going higher than where we are today. But you know what? Everybody focuses on that, but yet really the price of gold, it's all relative. I tell people if gold went from $1,500 to $250 and we had a purging of the system, you're far better off owning $250 gold than anything else that you could even dream of holding, because all things are relative. Now, does that mean I believe gold's going to go to $250? No. But the whole point, it's not all about price. Gold is there. It has a history. It has been accepted worldwide for how many years, thousands of years. That's not going to change. And that's what people can't get, you know, they can't absorb that this will be the new money, because nothing else will be accepted.
There's really no principle that's in your pieces of paper are intrinsically worthless. If you have a paper dollar, you have a paper bond, you have a paper stock, they are intrinsically worthless. Right? That's not true for gold. Gold has intrinsic value no matter what happens. In other words, we talked about in the article on Puerto Rico, they were talking about people who are holding bonds and they couldn't sell them.
That's right.
Because nobody's dumb enough to buy them. Right? Someone will always buy the gold. It is just about inconceivable that we will live to see a time when people say, oh, I don't want any gold. I'd much rather have paper. Paper is safer. I mean, we've kind of been through that time, and where has it taken us? We're going to learn a lesson. If we go into another recession or a depression, we are going to learn a big lesson. It will be learned globally, and the lesson will be that you can't trust the fiat currencies. And you especially can't trust a debt-based currency, and that's what we have. We have a debt-based monetary system, a debt-based economy. What is the difference between an economy based that's debt-based and an economy that's asset-based? And the debt-based economy, it seems wonderful. It seems almost like a spectacular drug when you first get into it. Why? Because all you need to make a debt is a promise. A debt-based economy is, I promise to pay you next week, next month, next year, next decade. I promise. That's all you need. If they will accept your promises, if you are a credible promise maker, you can spin all the money or all the currency you want out of thin air. A gold-based economy is asset-based. It's not based on promises. It's based on productivity. I have produced X number of dollars worth of profit. I have invested it in 1, 2, 10, or 100 of these gold coins. I have value that I am prepared to pay. I can pay you now. Not promise to pay. Not give you a piece of paper with a signature. Give you a payment. It's an asset-based monetary system and an asset-based economy. And you got to produce in that economy. In this economy, we can afford people on welfare. We can afford to pay people more than they're worth. We can afford to give them pensions that are greater than they deserve. It doesn't matter. All we have to do is make promises. And that's where we are. And we've made so many promises, and these promises are nothing. It's nothing but another word for debt. We've made all of these promises. People can't possibly keep all the promises that are out there, not just from the government, but from private as well. The debt is too great. The promises are too great. It's like you've got a dozen kids, and you promise to take them all, one to hockey, one to basketball, one to baseball camp. You're going to do it all on Tuesday. No, you're not. You can't keep all the promises. There's going to be a problem. We'll take a break for some commercial announcements. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I just can't believe it's August 1st. Do you realize it's going to be Christmas?
I can't believe it. What year is this? 2016? Are you kidding me?
It's going to be 2017 and just hold your breath. Just like,
I'm still getting ready for a party like it's 1999 or something like that. Good God. We're 17 years later already and working on the 18th since 2099. Hard to believe. All you can do is just kind of hold on. It's like riding a roller coaster. Just throw your arms up in the air and yay!
Well, I think
enjoy the ride.
I think we're getting close to that top first hill where we're about to go over. Yeah, you know, it always takes your breath away when you peek at the top. But today I'm on Facebook, and one of my clients, if he's listening, you know, he's purchased some gold and so forth, and he wrote something. He says, according to Bank of America Merrill Lynch, the global amount of government bonds having negative yields is now $13 trillion. We've talked about that before. Just 2 years ago, there were virtually zero negative interest rate bonds. He's correct. The subsequent two-year rise to $13 trillion is unprecedented. In February 2015, the total amount of negative interest debt was $3.6 trillion. By February 2016, that negative interest debt had nearly doubled to $7 trillion. In 5 months since February 2016, the amount of negative yielding bonds nearly doubled again to $13 trillion. The spread of negative yielding bonds is unprecedented, fantastic, and accelerating. He goes on, he says, I'm finally going to say something. He says, our country and thus the world is in a financial hole. It's going to be painful to get out of. Too much debt, the worst recovery possibly ever with extremely slow growth, a lack of decent jobs with many dropping out of the job market altogether, the government giving QE to their banking buddies, which stays in the banks, government statistics twisted to seem good, inflation, employment, etc. Note the negative yields globally and draw your own conclusions. Just think about having to pay your bank to hold your money. He says, beware of what's not being told by the controlled press big boys. And then he confirms that he is a conservative. But you know what? It's you don't see very many comments like that on, you know, these various social networks. You know, as soon as you express your thoughts, you get eliminated and so forth. So, you know, I just wanted to share that. And he's absolutely correct. It's incredible how those negative interest accounts went from, you know,
nothing 2 years ago.
Went to nothing.
Went from nothing
yep.
to 13 trillion in a matter of 2 years. And I'll say one other thing. Do you know where he's pulling those numbers from in the beginning?
This is according to Bank of America.
Yeah, he's taking it word for word from the article I wrote in the last issue of American Survival.
Yeah.
Huh? Talked about negative interest rates there, and he's just quoting it word for word.
He's quoting the stats, but then he goes on to talk.
Yeah, I know, but I quoted the same stats.
Yeah, I mean, it is really incredible. And so, again, folks, there's no getting out of this. You know, the negative, the bond should be your biggest clue of how close we are. These negative rates should be your clue. And
well, the other thing that's your clue is we have a debt-based economy. Very few people understand how significant it is that we have a debt-based monetary system and a debt-based economy. I've touched on this a couple of times on this program before, but it still needs to be said because I know people don't get this instantly and automatically. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, they had jubilees every 50 years. Right? And every 50 years, there was a jubilee, and that was when all debt was canceled. For example, if I'd borrowed 10 ounces of gold from Melody and the jubilee came along, I wouldn't have to pay her the 10 ounces of gold. Melody would be out 10 ounces. She loaned it to me, and jubilee came by before I got paid back off, before I'd paid the debt, and Melody's out 10 ounces of gold. But I still have the 10 ounces of gold, and I can still spend it. And that 10 ounces of gold, that asset, is still in my local economy. Right? The economy is not going to be hurt. Some people who have a bunch of money to lend, they're going to be hurt because they don't get their money back after they've loaned it out because of the jubilee. But the money, the pieces of gold, the pieces of silver, are still there because it's an asset-based monetary system. Today, we have a debt-based monetary system. And if I borrow $100,000 from Melody, right, and I sign a note, and Melody has that note, she uses it, she says, oh, look, I've got a bond here from Alfred Addis, says $100,000. She counts that as an asset. If anything happens to me where I can't, won't, don't pay that note back, she loses that $100,000 in paper assets. Ceases to exist. This is what I'm talking about when I say one man's debt is another man's asset. If the debt dies, so does the asset. Didn't happen in the Old Testament. If the debt died, the asset was still there. The gold was still there in the economy. Somebody else had it. It wasn't in Melody's hands anymore. It was in someone else's. But the gold was still there, and the economy could continue to function. In the debt-based economy, if this thing goes south, it doesn't just wipe out the debt. It wipes out the assets, the paper assets. And there is the enormous and incredible danger, because if this thing really gets bad, what are we going to use for capital to build the next shopping center, factory, lend money to buy another flat screen TV, an automobile, buy a house, whatever? The currents, the debt, the paper assets, they will be wiped out when the debt is, when it's admitted the government is bankrupt and can't pay the debt. And there's the big danger. You have a jubilee in the Old Testament because you had asset-based money. Gold and silver was still there. Go ahead, cancel the debt, but the money is still there. Cancel the debt here, currency disappears, value disappears, assets, paper assets disappear, and the economy is imperiled in a way where it will not easily escape. I mean, we'll go into a problem that could last for a decade or more. So there's, for me, this is trying to illustrate how dangerous it is to have a debt-based monetary system. It's a giddy experience. For a while there, all you got to do is make a promise. Just sign your name on a piece of paper and they give you currency. And you sit back and say, is this a great country or what? Well, the answer is about to be or what? You're going to find out that you're not going to be able to just sign your name to get currency, to get wealth, to get credit. It isn't going to work anymore. And those of you who think you're going to collect on those pieces of paper, you are going to suffer a significant loss of assets. So
here's an interesting article. There was two recent stories about the welfare of this country, the welfare state that has become in America today. The first was an announcement by the feds that food stamps can be used to have groceries delivered right to the recipient's door. The Obama administration says it's just too much of a hardship for those on welfare to actually travel to the grocery store. The second story, and I remember reading an article, I can't remember, she's got red hair, by a lady. I know, I remember she's got red hair. She was very much in this venue in the Patriot community for a very long time, but I can't recall her name. She wrote an article probably 10, 15 years ago about the Jenny Craig and the Nutrisystem. She says all that is a test, a way to have food delivered to homes for the future. And when I just saw this about how welfare, where they will actually have food delivered, it put me back to what she was predicting and what she had talked about those programs. Because at that point in time, there was only those two programs out there that would actually deliver food to your home. So, you know, again.
Do they have any plans to cook the food when they get it there,
well,
or maybe spoon feed you?
Well, you know,
can
maybe
just sit there on the couch and they'll spoon feed you like a little baby.
But there's a second story about the state governor Paul LePage to prohibit food stamp recipients from using their food aid to purchase junk foods like sugary soft drinks and so forth. He says, you know. Well, we all know why. The Obama administration rejected his request and left the activists act as if the idea that a welfare recipient can't buy a pint of ice cream at taxpayers' expense is a violation of civil liberties. The point of all this was the welfare, the state of mind has really spiraled out of control, and no one is addressing the situation. The cost of welfare is now well over $1 trillion a year. Food stamps, they have replaced dollars as the new standard currency in a lot of your inner cities in this country.
Uh-huh.
And in your affluent areas, some of your upscale grocery stores, they also will take food stamps, and you'll see people leave with cakes to lobsters. But it really is amazing that we're in the seventh year of the so-called recovery. About 45 million Americans depend on taxpayers to put food on their table. This is roughly 5 million more than when Obama took office. Medicaid rolls have exploded by more than 10 million. And it's just like these numbers, you know, this is sort of a quantitative easing. This is sort of like a stimulus because you give these people these funds and they can go out and they can spend.
And, well, that's part of the justification.
Yeah.
I'll bet that's part of the rationalization.
Absolutely it
sure.
is. Absolutely
but
it is.
They're not producing anything. And in the end, it can't work out well. In the meantime, they're being conditioned. They've lost their ability to work. It's certainly been compromised. They haven't had to work in a long period of time. They don't know what it means anymore. They aren't going to just step up off the bench. They haven't been in the game for a long time. You're not just going to say, okay, Johnson, get in there for Smith. And Johnson doesn't know what the heck to do. He hadn't played for so long that he doesn't know what to do. These people will not easily shift over to where they can support themselves. And this goes to this entitlement mentality. That if you're of a particular gender, a particular race, a particular age, whatever, you're entitled. Let me tell you the truth of the matter. Not one of you in the audience are entitled to one nickel that you haven't personally earned. All of us get nickels we haven't earned. We get our parents support us when we're kids, and when we're elderly, they may support us again. But that's charity. It is not an entitlement. When the government says, oh, you're special, you're entitled. If you fall for that, you are headed for enormous trouble, and it's part and parcel of what Melody was just talking about now with all these welfare programs and the rest of this craziness. There's an article here from the New York Post about Venezuela.
Well,
it's on the brink of total collapse.
It isn't craziness, Al. I mean, it goes to show you how what condition this country is in, that it is, we don't have the recovery that everybody is told, and that there is a day of reckoning, because, and this is just another sign. You know, this is the 2x4. It isn't a leaf. It's a 2x4. And what's who's paying for this?
Well, everybody's going to pay
for all of this.
We will
now?
All pay for it.
We're all going to pay for it, but who's paying for it now? Go ahead.
This article on Venezuela. Venezuela is on the brink of total collapse. The Marxist paradise of Venezuela has become home to the world's worst economy. Venezuela is beset by severe food shortages, riots on the streets, and hyperinflation that's closing in on 700%. The reason world oil prices have plummeted, and Venezuela relies on oil for 95% of its income. Agriculture. Venezuelan agriculture was neglected under former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez and current President Nicolas Maduro. They've both placed all their economic chips on crude oil and elected to import goods from abroad while spending on social programs that rallied the poor, that is to say the non-productive, behind government. They've been importing, which means they haven't been producing. They haven't been growing their own food. They haven't been making their own products. They thought they could just live off the crude oil pumping forever. They have spent their money on social programs. This is entitlements down in Venezuela. Goes on and says, but now Venezuela has no cash to import food or other essentials. And because Chavez nationalized so much industry, it has no private sector to compensate. When we talk about nationalizing industry, how different is that? They nationalize. That's what communists do. They nationalize industries, see? But we're different. What we do is regulate industries. We don't nationalize them. That would be something for the fascists and the communists. We just bury them under tons of regulations. I don't think there's a real definition or a real distinction between nationalization and regulation. You got enough regulations on it, you've effectively nationalized your industry. That's what's happening in this country. We are following Venezuela's path. President Maduro has issued an executive decree that subjects all workers to being forced to work for 60 days or more, if circumstances merit, in the fields. All right? Their farms have been neglected because they have been importing, because they had this source of currency, which was the pumping oil, and then the price of oil fell. They don't know how to grow their own food anymore. They haven't been running their own farms. There's a lesson in this, and it is against the idea of globalism in the sense of becoming dependent on other nations and other communities, even for your survival, for your fundamental needs. You can't just sit back and say, I'm entitled, I don't need to work. Everyone needs to work. You don't work, you don't eat. It's the reality of the world. It's been true for thousands of years. It's going to continue to be true, although governments will sometimes come up and politicians say, you're special. You don't need to work to support yourself. We're going to give you money just because we like your smile. That politician is lying. He's conning you. He's saying, you're an idiot. You think you don't need to work. You're an idiot, and you're exactly the kind of clown that the Democrats are looking for and even the Republicans are looking for. People who think they don't need to work to support themselves. People who think they don't need to be competent, independent. Well, if you're willing to embrace that entitlement mentality, you're headed for a time that's going to be very similar to what they're seeing right now in Venezuela. This article concludes, it says, Venezuela is on the brink of total collapse. Whatever happens next won't be pretty. No, it won't. All right? Whatever happens next in this country is not going to be pretty either. I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
ancient Greeks thought thyme herb provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes the nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom. What's next, Melody?
You know, we during the break, we were just reading this article, the big headline, you know, they closed the door. The fire marshals where Donald Trump is looking to speak, I think it's in Columbus, Ohio. The hall that he was in was only half used, and they closed the door, and they have people outside. Because of a fire, you know, because of the fire issues. So Trump is blasting the fire marshal for political interference after thousands are left outside his rally, even though there's empty spaces inside. You know, it's good. I don't know what to say. You're beginning to hear so many strange things anymore about this election. I talked to a lot of people, and they're all kind of tired of it. They're all worn out with the election.
I know.
And, you know, to me, that is sort of a scary thought, because when you're tired of the election, to me, that just gives Hillary another leg closer to being president. And we just can't, you know, that just can't happen.
I've heard one report that estimates that only 40% of the people will vote in this election just because there's so fed up with it. Now, normally 40% is bad in an off-year election, but in a presidential election, we'll do 45, 50, even a little more than 50% of total eligible voters who actually vote. This year, it might be only 40%, according to one study, which means it's kind of like handing out a ballot, and then on the top line, you have straight Republican, then you have straight, then you have a little box, straight Democrat, and then you have another little box that says none of the above. I'm beginning to think if we ran the election on that basis, none of the above would beat both Trump and Hillary. You know, there'd be about 60% who'd come in there. None of them. Get rid of all of them.
Well, what's interesting is this hall seats over 4,000 people, 4,100 people, and they only have like 2,000 in there, and they shut it due to fire code. Now, that is kind of hard to believe that there isn't some sort of a background agenda to that, but
well, if the building is built to house 4,000,
that's what this article says.
They're essentially restricting it to 2,000 because of the fire code. How did they ever get that building built in the first place? The building must be out of fire code to begin with. I mean, you don't build a 4,000 seat building an arena if you can, if fire code will only let you have 2,000 people come in. Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. So, yeah. You know, you can see, but so I thought that was interesting. And, and I think what, you know, you said 40%. I think what might happen, and I hope it doesn't happen with Trump voters, everybody will think he's a shoo-in, and they're not going to go out and vote. That's what happens many times.
Whoever inspires people the most, the inspired voters are the ones that are going to show up and perhaps dominate this election. And if Hillary's supporters are sufficiently inspired and even virulent, they will dominate. And on the other hand, if Trump has inspired enough people where they are just crazy, I'm going to vote for Trump no matter what, then Trump will win. So it has a lot to do with which one of these candidates will, you know, attract the really dedicated who are going to show up. I don't care if there's fire coming down out of the sky, I'm voting for Trump. Or, you know, if it's hailstones the size of basketballs, I'm still going to vote for Hillary.
What's interesting is two of the debates are scheduled. I think one is on Monday Night Football and the other one is during the Sunday Night Football. I know two of them were scheduled at the same time. They're NFL football games. And so that was the big problem. Trump, I believe, tried to get it changed. But you know what? People are going to watch. I think people will watch at least the first debate.
Are they planning only two debates?
They're planning three, but two of them are during NFL games.
Okay.
I believe it was Sunday and Monday. And, you know, they usually capture the country's viewers for those two nights during those games. So
I think they're going to capture more conservatives than liberals, meaning, which suggests to me there'll be a larger liberal audience for these debates than there will be conservative. I'm going to guess that Trump would attract more football fans than Hillary.
I would think.
Could be wrong, but that'd be my guess.
Well, we'll see. But you know, it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure if people will watch those debates or not. And certainly Hillary, this is ideal for her because most of her debates were on Saturday night when everybody was, you know, it was either so late people were sleeping or, you know, doing something else on a Saturday night. I think several of her debates were on a Saturday evening, maybe all of them, but
that's because she can't get a date.
Probably.
Uh-huh.
Willie's too old.
Either have to stay home.
Bill is sleeping.
Stay home or go out in a debate. Can't find anybody. You know.
Bill is sleeping.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but with who?
Yes.
I'm sorry, you can't talk to Bill. He's sleeping right now. Oh, who's he sleeping
with? Anyway, I just want to remind the listeners to get to our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And we have great prices on all of our products, our fractional pieces, half-ounce American Gold Eagles, my favorite, the $5 almost uncirculated Liberty Gold piece. They're great fractional pieces along with the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. Add a little bit of silver to your portfolio, either American Silver Eagles, 90% silver. I love the Morgan Silver Dollars. If you have a nice little mix of those main three products, you don't need to own a coin store when you're acquiring your gold and silver coins. You know, you get the quality coins, you get items that are recognizable and acceptable, and you accumulate. That is what's going to give you the most bang for your dollars and the best way to position yourself in your gold and silver purchases. Have a plan. If you accumulate on a monthly basis, if you accumulate once a year, if you accumulate every 6 months or monthly, you know, let us put out a plan for you. So when you do your purchases, you'll know exactly what you're looking for and how many you would like. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
An article here about China, which is a little strange. The headline, this is from Business Insider in Australia. The headline is Major Chinese State Paper Calls for a Military Strike on Australian Ships That Enter the South China Sea. That's the headline. Earlier this year, the commander of the U.S. 7th Fleet, Vice Admiral Joseph P. Alcoin, said that it would be in the best interests of the region if Australia would send ships to within 12 miles of the disputed area. Australia has so far not sent any ships there. However, China's state-run Global Times recently published an editorial attacking Australia for supporting the recent international ruling on China's activities in the South China Sea and called for strikes on any Australian ship which might undertake freedom of navigation activities in the region. If such activities happen, according to this article, quote, China must take revenge and let Australia know it's wrong. Australia's power means nothing compared to the security of China. If Australia steps into the South China Sea waters, it will be an ideal target for China to warn and strike. Now, where I'm going with this, is this just me, or have folks also noticed that China has become increasingly belligerent over the past year or so? If it's true that China really is becoming increasingly belligerent, we have to ask why. Why is it becoming more belligerent? A lot of people would suppose that it's simply flexing its muscles. As China becomes more powerful on the international stage, it's going to just flex its muscles a little bit, and these things are nothing more than posturing. But I can't help wondering if China's leaders don't recognize that China is headed for a serious economic recession and or depression that will infuriate the Chinese people and maybe predispose them to political revolution. I'm wondering, could it be that China's growing belligerence is intended to divert the Chinese people's attention from their economy so they can focus on their foreign adversaries? If they focus on foreign adversaries, they will tend to support the Chinese government. They will be less critical of the government. Now, what do you think, Melody? Is China just flexing its muscles, or is China trying to move its people's focus from their economy to foreign invaders? And the underlying point then would be that China expects some sort of a recession, maybe a depression, and they're saying, pay no attention to that. The real problem is these foreigners down here in the South China Seas. What do you think is happening?
Probably both. I haven't said that for a while.
No, I was just thinking myself. I was actually thinking I'd got you cured of that, and then it turns out, nope.
No, I don't think it's so much they're concerned about any type of a revolution or anything like that. Possibly a distraction from their economy and the pressures. But I don't think the Chinese people are that. I think they're a little more in tune. I don't think the Chinese people are the sheeple like the U.S. people are. I think they very well know their place. I think they very well know their situation and so forth. So, yeah, there might be a little bit of a distraction there, but I don't think China needs to as much as a country like the U.S. does.
You never know. That's a fragile. They're fragile over there.
They're fragile, but,
their fundamental focus is how do we control this vast... They've got something like 26 different languages in their...
Yeah, well, they just bomb
languages, cultures. It's a United Nations, and they're trying to keep everything copacetic, and that's not easily done.
Yeah, well, they do it by force. But I believe that as far as their military, I think they want the world to know, and particularly they just recently signed. I think it was last week or the week before they signed an economic pact with Russia. And I think they are flexing their muscles. They want that area in that South China Seas. They don't want anybody messing with them. And so, yeah, there's a lot going on as far as their military. A lot of people always spoofed, you know, their military. Oh, it's just China. What do they have? Well, I'll tell you what, they have a lot. They have grown their military on the U.S. P- people's desire to consume everything that they can, that their little hearts desire. We have supported China in building up their military. And I think they want to be taken seriously. And I wouldn't test them. I wouldn't test China.
No, I'm just curious. I'm just speculating on what their motives may be. I think it's all just chatter right now. If you're really going to get into a fight, you shouldn't be telling people, now, till next Tuesday, I'm going to come over to your house and set it on fire. Well, I'll be there about 9 o'clock.
I don't think they're looking for a fight, but I think they're saying, don't mess with us.
Well, of course, everybody says that to greater or lesser degree. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't mess with us. We're really tough.
Yeah, but they were never taken seriously before.
Well, what's serious about it is you can't invade China.
No.
You can bomb them. You can fight with them out in the ocean, the rest of that, but you're crazy to put ground troops on the, and say, we're going to invade with ground troops. No, you're not.
No way.
That would be so stupid. You can't, you can't deal with a billion people that are armed that are against you, even if they're just throwing
rocks. And I guarantee you their military is nasty. Yeah.
So far as it's there, our military is nasty, too, given the opportunities. But you don't want to go to war on Chinese soil. That would be dumb. I've got one more story here before we close out. This is from the Associated Press, and if you haven't heard this already, you might think this is some sort of a crazy joke, but it's not. The headline is, Skydiver becomes first person to jump and land without a chute. After leaping from an airplane, Luke Akins rocketed toward Earth for 2 minutes. He left the airplane at 25,000 feet and then calmly flipped onto his back in the last second and landed in a 100-by-100-foot net in California. The 42-year-old skydiver with more than 18,000 jumps made history as the first person to survive a leap without a parachute and land safely in a net. I look at this and I'm thinking to myself, holy cow. I mean, you got to be crazy or extraordinarily courageous, or you jump out of an airplane without a chute and aim for a net that's 100 feet by 100 feet that's 25,000 feet below. I mean, just a little bit of extra wind one way or another, and you got a serious problem. An extraordinary event, an extraordinary achievement. I don't think anybody'd want to do it another time, but regardless, pretty amazing. We're out of time. Thank you for listening, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, always sunny in a rich man's world.